listeners, welcome back. This is episode number 93 of eBay the Right Way. Today's date is December 28th, 2022, and this is the final episode of 2022. And I cannot believe we are almost up to 100 episodes. You just never know where things are going to go when you start them. And I am thrilled that we have made it this far. So thank you all for tuning in every week. My guest in this episode is Jackie in North Carolina, who is an attorney and does eBay as a side hustle. A couple of quick announcements. The big one is that the IRS has announced a delay for implementing the $600 reporting threshold for third-party payment platforms 1099-K. This announcement came out on December 23rd, 2022. And in a nutshell, it says, so they're talking about the $600 threshold on PayPal or eBay managed payments or Square or Stripe or any of these third-party payment processors. As a result of this delay, third-party settlement organizations will not be required to report tax year 2022 transactions on a Form 1099-K to the IRS or the payee for the lower $600 threshold amount. The bottom line of this announcement says, the IRS noted that the 1099-K reporting threshold of $20,000 in payments from over 200 transactions will remain in effect. So what does this mean and why should you care? Okay, as an eBay seller, you should be reporting your income. And in previous years and continuing for next year, you only get a 1099-K from eBay when your payments are $20,000, that's money coming into you, from over 200 transactions. Both of those criteria must be met for a 1099 to be issued. But just because you don't get a 1099 doesn't mean you should report your income. So I have the link to this announcement below the podcast. You can go read it. If you have any questions, direct those to a tax or financial professional, not me. I am not qualified to give tax or financial advice. So you need to ask somebody in that industry, what does this mean? How does this affect me? On and on. But this is a big deal because the threshold for receiving that 1099-K was supposed to have dropped to $600 for tax year 22, but now the IRS is saying, no, it's not going to. We're going to continue on with that criteria of $20,000 in payments from over 200 transactions. Okay, that's all I'm going to say about that. Next is a note about sound effects in my podcasts. I've received a few emails about the fire engine and siren sound effects, and these emails kind of made me laugh. I didn't even think about this when putting together my podcasts. Some of you listen to my podcasts while driving, and when those siren sound effects come on, some listeners have actually pulled over to the side of the road thinking it was a real siren. And then you look around and there's nothing there. So I won't be using siren sound effects anymore because I don't want to give anybody a heart attack. I don't want anybody to freak out while they're driving. So I will definitely make that change. Okay, now into the chat with Jackie.
Hey, listeners. Today we have Jackie with us, and we had a little chat before recording, and we just have crossed paths so many times that, wow, here we are now doing this. So tell us your location, Jackie.
I live in Charlotte, North Carolina.
And you live pretty near where I went to college at Queens. It's Queens University now, but it was Queens College back in the day.
Yes, indeed.
That's a small world right there. Well, and I wanted to have you on because, you know, I've noticed your posts for years on the group, but lately you're just killing it.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Suzanne.
So tell us a little bit about your, you know, history up to this point, how you got started with eBay.
Okay. I am originally from Kansas City, Kansas. And I know you had a podcast guest who was from Kansas City, Missouri.
I think that was Allison Haveman.
Maybe.
Yes.
And I really enjoyed that and took notes about some of the things that she said as I do go visit my parents there from time to time.
Oh, great.
I spent most of my adult life and college years in Atlanta, Georgia, and was there through 2016 when my family and I relocated to Charlotte, North Carolina from Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you went to both Spelman and Georgia State.
Yes, I did. Spelman undergrad and Georgia State College of Law. I am trained as an attorney and licensed to do that.
Okay. So I better be careful what I say in this podcast.
Oh, you're fine.
Now, when were you at Georgia State? What year?
I was there in the early 90s.
Okay.
I didn't go straight to law school. I worked for a few years before mm-hmm. going to law school. And based on other podcasts, I believe I'm a year younger than you.
So okay.
Yeah,
you look like you're 20 years younger than me.
Nope, just 1 year younger.
Okay. Than me. So you were at Georgia State before the Olympics came in 96.
Yes. I was there before the Olympics. And so
built everything for the athletes, which then turned into dorms for
yes.
and Georgia State, I think.
Yes, yes. It was a very big boost for the universities at that time. And that was the 96 right. Olympics.
Mm-hmm. That is so crazy because I was at Georgia State from like 85 to 88.
Okay. You were there before I was.
In my 7 year get yourself through college plan.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved to Charlotte because my husband's job moved us there.
Okay.
And had to wait a year to get in-state residency. Mm-hmm. But also I went to work for Wachovia Bank.
Okay.
And got on their tuition reimbursement program
right.
for night school. So that was just a gift from above. Just I got to go to Queens. It was such a beautiful campus. It was a night program. It was kind of laid back and it was free. I mean, like not today's free college. It was real free college.
Yes.
And you live right near there. That is so
I do.
Crazy.
It's a beautiful campus.
Yes. And it's really grown. I think I was there a couple of years ago and just couldn't believe how many apartment complexes, dorms, all kinds of businesses, restaurants, all of that. Mm-hmm. But they left all those gorgeous trees and it's just, I loved going there.
Yeah, it's very pretty.
To get my business degree so I can sell stuffed animals on eBay.
Well, that's fun. You're making money and you're living your dream and that's what's important.
You know? That's really it. So you're kind of doing the same thing. You said you were between real jobs right now.
Yes.
But
I'm leaning on the law right now. So I'm doing transactional work for clients and enjoying that. And I do a lot of pro bono work. I've always done that. And I'm continuing to do that as well.
Now, what does transactional law mean?
It means not litigation. A lot of it can mean papers, contracts. So that could be contracts, that could be real estate deeds. It's
okay.
Pretty much things that don't involve actually appearing in court.
Oh, that sounds like a good way to go.
Yes, I like it.
Okay, now, so what brought you to eBay? What was the catalyst that said, I think I should sell on eBay?
So it really wasn't a straight shot for me. I was familiar with eBay. Early in the 2000s, one of my cousins who lives in the DC area, she was a stay-at-home mom, and she was going to Nordstrom Rack purchasing shoes in large sizes for ladies and selling them and reselling them on eBay. Mm-hmm. And she was just really doing well with that. Then, so it was on my radar. So as things continued, you know, I would just kind of hear about it. I would look and see, but I did set up an account and I slowly started selling little things, like really little things. Like I would sell box tops for education because I didn't understand why people would pay more than the value for those, but they did. And so
their kid could win a prize.
But I didn't understand that. And so while my kids' school was collecting them, I just took the money from the sales and gave it to the school because it was that's how the market was. Then when we moved to Charlotte, life really changed for me. I wasn't as social as I had been in Atlanta. I was really starting over. And I started out making elaborate snacks, what I'll say. I was cooking a lot, you know, making everything from scratch and all this, just filling up time. And that wasn't working. I said, you know, this is not sustainable. So I need to come up with something else to do.
That was your Martha Stewart phase.
Now that's a good thing.
Yeah. And it just wasn't sustainable. You know?
Oh, so you were selling those?
No, I was just sad. You know, my family come home and we'd have some little plates, you know, or just something that just really didn't, you know, it just wasn't sustainable. And I'm like, I've got to find something to do with this time. And around that time, for whatever reason, we started getting in the mail formula coupons. And so I was like, well, what am I going to do with these formula coupons? I could go and get the formula and find some place to donate it, but I don't know if that's going to work, you know. And so looked on eBay and they were selling very quick, you know, just, I mean, like you listed and a couple seconds later, it would sell. And so I started selling those when they came in the mail. And again, I was donating that money to my church because I was like, well, I give the money to the food pantry because I didn't know what else to do with it. Now, that was just kind of nice. And then I just started easing my way into eBay. And I found you, I think, on YouTube because I didn't even have a Facebook account. I was actually sharing with one of my friends who had given me all of his information and I could see what was going on. Because professionally, I didn't know if I wanted to be on Facebook.
Right.
But I couldn't get into your group. And I was like, what am I going to do? Because I couldn't really see it at that time with his account.
Did you request to join? And it was
no, because, oh, it, okay. Because it would have been him that was doing it.
Oh, I see.
It wasn't my account.
Gotcha.
And I was just really curious about what was going on. And you would reference it. And it was just like, you know, being outside of an opaque glass because you couldn't see what it was.
Right.
And some things happened. And my son actually graduated from high school and some life changes. And I said, I think I'm ready to be on Facebook. And so I got on Facebook and that was probably the first group that I joined. So I could
go and see
everything that was posted and, you know, see all of the community and be a part of the community. And it's been a wonderful addition to the things that I've been doing on eBay. So thank you so much for having the group and creating it and curating it for us.
Well, it's my pleasure. And that started because I got kicked out of other groups. I'm like, hey, I've been kicked out of better places than this. And it was really just because other groups all revolved around a specific product like Gymboree or something like that. And I would say I was pretty outspoken. I was like, why don't you guys sell other things? There's so much out there to be sold. And they didn't want to hear that. They just kicked me out. So I was like, fine, I'll just go start my own. And that was right around the time Facebook emerged and you could have these groups. And it's like working at home is isolating. This business was kind of new and people had a lot of questions. And it's like, oh, I went on Yahoo Answers. You remember that?
Yes, yes.
And I would answer questions because I just, oh, I know how to do that. Oh, I know what that is. And it was like entertainment, really. And then I realized how many people wanted to do this and how many people, like, it was life-changing for people, you know. Yes. This paid for my, you know, my child's braces. This paid for my child's college. This paid for, you know, me to stay home and take care of my sick mother, whatever it was, you know, it really can be life-changing.
Yes. And I remember that you had maybe a couple years ago, there was a group member that used the proceeds to buy her child a car.
Yes.
And I thought that was, I was like, this is just really incredible. And also in my pro bono work, I do meet people who, for whatever reason, are unable to work in a traditional job.
Exactly.
And so, and I thought, rather than me tell them, go do eBay, if I participate, I may be able to help guide that, if that's something that they would like to do as well, because it really has been a blessing to a lot of people. And I understand that.
Well, and back to not being able to work a traditional job, there's just so much of that out there with, you know, MS or, you know, cancer or spinal injuries or whatever, like these people want to work. They want to be productive, but they just can't commit to a 9-to-5 because they don't know how they're going to feel every day.
Right.
And you could, okay, I'm going to rest today and then I feel better at 5 o'clock and then I can work some, you know, it's not a complete loss if you don't feel well. And, I'm fortunate enough to never have had a chronic illness other than migraines, but my daughter did. Mm-hmm. And I was able to see that, you know, some mornings you wake up and it's just the whole day is a loss because you just feel terrible and you can't. And then you start to feel bad about yourself if you do have a traditional job and you keep calling in sick or you have doctor's appointments and therapies and all those things that eBay just can be a great accompaniment to that situation because you can work when you feel good.
Yes, absolutely. And as in my capacity, I've come across people that may have other issues other than illness, which prevent them from having a traditional job as well. And this allows them to make the income to provide for them, for their families, in some cases, restitution, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. And people want to feel good about themselves. And this, I think, really helps them to do that. So it is a blessing.
Yeah. Even if you're just busy working on it, like you're not making a ton of money, but you feel productive, you feel like, you are contributing. And especially when you get feedback from somebody who bought something from you that they've been looking for, or this is the perfect thing, or, you know, this clothing fit me perfectly. And, you know, you're making them happy. So, it's just this whole cycle of different parts of the eBay business that can really work if you can't do a traditional job. Another big category is caregivers.
Yes.
You know? Maybe you don't want a stranger coming in your house doing the home health stuff, and you can do this on the side. I hear that a lot because, or of course, the expense of it is one thing, but, you know, just like, no, I want to take care of my mama because I can do the job better than anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So great. Okay. Well, you're in Charlotte and we've been seeing your sales on the group, which I've threatened to come up there and have lunch and go shopping with you.
I'd love it.
I mean, I'm finding great things here in Greenville, but you know, you're just up the road 2 hours. So why
not? Yes, come on.
So tell us about some of your sales, surprising or high dollar, like, oh, I just couldn't believe that sold.
Okay. I'll share a few of those with you. So like you've recently mentioned, and I really had to think about, but it does make sense, is that you make your money when you buy. So I've really taken that into account. And I knew that I needed to buy cheaper in order to make the money that I wanted to make. And so it just became like a challenge. So how can I do that? you know, what allows me to do it? And so in that, I've discovered that I can get my best returns on items from estate sales. And I've really been trying to make that a more dedicated push, because they may allow you to group things together, like you go create a pile, or they're priced lower. So that's been really good for me. So usually on so on Friday mornings, I'll keep that open so I can go to estate sales, because that's when they are here. Mostly, they're not many that start on Thursday. And so I'll go there, and I go to I go to estatesales.net.
Okay.
And that's where I find the estate sales. And I look through the pictures, and I can kind of gauge by the pictures, I can get an idea of the sale. Like, you can tell if the by the items, if the person maybe is the decedent, I guess, is has depth in a certain area and maybe not another. So maybe they have a lot of high dollar clothes, but the furniture isn't as high dollar, or something to that nature. And so you get to kind of seeing how that is. And I'll use that information to prioritize my sales, like where I'm going to go. Mm-hmm. And so with estate sales, but also with online auctions, I use that information as well. If they have a lot of things that are nice, or maybe, you know, it's segmented, that kind of thing. And so one of my best returns was actually from HiBid. Mm-hmm. This was an estate sale that they were doing, ironically, so it crossed both. And I could tell from the lots that this person had a lot of nice things. The kitchen, the crafts, everything seemed to be high-end. So I made that place a priority. And in this instance, they offered a preview of the sale prior to the bidding. And I knew that they had a lot of, that this person was a crafter. And I do like crafts. I like fine arts and crafts and things of that nature. And so I wanted to go and see what was in. They had a lot of storage bins, like the plastic totes. Uh-huh. And so I went to preview, and that's what I had my eye on, because I knew that if there was something of value in the totes, I was going to bid on it. And I knew that would have less competition, because you wouldn't bid up a tote unseen.
Right. Yeah. The mystery tote.
Right. Right. And so they had a lot of those, and I went, and it was a lot of craft items in there. And I just thought, okay, and it was enough. I said that I'll be able to get my money back on maybe just a couple of sales. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, as I suspected, I won the lot, and I found the receipt recently. I think I paid like $38 with fees. And it was a lot of totes, a lot of things that I was unfamiliar with as well, but I won the entire lot. So my husband and I went over to get it and just put all the stuff in the car, kind of sorted out. Some things we knew were going to go straight to Goodwill, like maybe there were some curtains and things in there that I knew I wouldn't be able to do anything with. So we dropped those off to Goodwill. Then we came to the house, unloaded all the totes.
That is smart, to drop it off before you bring it home.
Yes. Yes, I had to do that, because I will keep the things around. My husband is really a neat freak, and it bothers him to see, as he says, clutter. So he can't.
It's more time efficient if you just touch it once.
Yes.
Or
yes.
I guess twice. Once to put it in your car, and but just don't even bring it home. Then you don't have to think about it. You don't have to figure it out. You don't have to, what should I sell those or not? You know, and right. That takes time and energy.
It does. And so we did that, bought it home, and I went through it, and it was just absolutely wonderful. There were all kinds of things. And like I said, this lady, the depth of her things was interesting. So even things that may not have had value in other places, she may have valued. Her scissors were high-grade scissors. The yarns that she purchased were high-grade yarns. Everything was consistently good. I had to do some research on items. She had some notions that I had no idea what they were and how they were used. But you know, they were high value or higher value than at least I expected. And so I got a wonderful, wonderful return on that and really enjoyed it. It was a great experience. And I certainly keep some of those takeaways in mind as I look at other online auctions and estate sales as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, and back to crafting and sewing, there's all grades of materials and tools and all that. And you can tell a serious seamstress by their scissors, because there's some that, you know, you have to sharpen, and then there's just the crappy Walmart $4 scissors. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, they're usually very heavy. The yes. silver, I can't even think of the name brands. The crafters out there will know, but just, you can tell by picking things up, like, oh, this is heavy. This feels high quality.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Usually means so expensive.
Yes. Yes. And so that was a really good return for me. Recently, I went to an in-person sale, and I do like crafts. My children's grandfather, he was an artist. Mm. And so my children have very good art abilities as well. And so I kind of know the peculiarities of artists, you know, the paints, the paint brushes, the canvas, all of those kind of things. I've not directly worked with them, but they've been in my periphery.
Uh-huh.
So I have a familiarity with that. And so I've been doing really well in that area. I got a lot of paintbrushes recently, artist paintbrushes.
Uh-huh.
And so it was a learning experience for me. So I had to sort through them and learn about the different types of bristles, you know, natural or synthetic. But then I was able to group the things by vendor and by type and all of that. And so I put some of those up, and I've had really good returns on paintbrushes, which, but as when I saw it, I knew it wasn't a lot of competition. I think a lot of people would walk by it not knowing, but I was able to benefit from that. And so that's something that's been good. And I've, one of my friend's daughter is an art major in school. And so I'm going to take some brushes to her this weekend and let her choose if there's some that she wants. But I've already made my money back several times over on the lot of paintbrushes that I recently purchased.
I mean, it's just never stops what has value and what people are looking for.
Yes.
Did you clean the paintbrushes before you listed them?
I did. And I've had to research that. And it was just, you know, pretty much I used Dawn and just water, and I washed them all. And they were fairly clean. I did that though, and lotted them up. And that was, once I got through the research, it's been very easy to list, and I've listed them in lots, because an individual paintbrush is going to bring more money, but people pay like $20 for a single paintbrush. That's not unusual for them.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's they're made to last, they're durable, the wood is expensive, whatever kind of bristles might be, like horsehair or something like that. Yeah. And the naked untrained eye doesn't know that. You just see, it's like shopping somebody's tool shed. It's just all this stuff that's dirty and piled up, and it's like, doesn't look like it's worth anything.
Right. But
yeah, it's having the trained eye to see that. And it makes it a more fun challenge when you are looking at things that other people are ignoring.
Yes. The treasure, as you say.
Yeah. They flock to the obviously expensive things, but it's just, nobody can know everything.
Right. Right. And so I'm enjoying the arts, and I've learned from your podcast and other Facebook, in the Facebook group, that the bathroom has been a treasure for me.
I mean, it is hidden treasure in there.
It's hidden treasure in the bathroom. I found at the same lot with the paint, the same home with the paintbrushes, I went in the bathroom, I found a bar of soap, and it was Redken, which I remembered. I think it used to be maybe hair color, or I remembered seeing Redken. I was familiar with.
Oh yeah, Redken. That's a higher end line of hair products. They used to only be sold in salons, and then I don't know, 90s, they put them in Walmart and everywhere, like beauty supply. But yeah, that was definitely, that stuff can be expensive because it's specialty.
Yes, it's specialty. And this was a bar of soap. And I didn't realize that Redken made soap, but I just, you know, I looked it up, bought the bar of soap for a dollar. I looked it up at the estate sale, which I've gotten much more comfortable to do that. And that took a bit of time for me. That was a ramp up because I didn't necessarily want people to see me looking and on my phone and all this kind of thing.
Well, but I mean, for a dollar, if you go wrong, you just use it yourself.
Exactly. Exactly. Or donate it.
Yeah.
And I listed that there. I was the only one to have an active listing. I'd researched, sold, of course. I listed it for $60, thinking that maybe I'll stretch it. Although the other ones had sold for $50, I received an offer for $50, and I was like, yeah, I'll take that.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because I just didn't think the market was that big for people wanting this Redken $50, $55 soap. And why not just go ahead and get this out the house and get the money and keep it moving? And so that's what I did.
Yeah, I've started accepting offers faster than I used to because you don't know when the next offer is going to come along.
Yes.
And it was only a dollar, you know, how you can't really lose on that. But
right.
It's more of like a turn and burn kind of thing because it's just, we're never going to run out of inventory.
You're right. And I've come to witness that myself. And what I will do though, is I'm not off. I will sit on an offer for a while to see if maybe something else comes through. I used to rush to just accept these, but I don't want them to change their mind, you know, and retract.
Yeah.
But I am sitting on them longer. And if that time comes around, I haven't gotten any, then I'll just accept it, move on and just keep it moving. Because like you say, there's really endless inventory, or at least it appears that way.
Yeah. And you know, you made your money.
Yeah.
You can move on. And so what if somebody sells it for more than you sold it, you know, to them? Our profit margins are bigger on the front end rather than like collectors that buy stuff
yes.
for $20, $30, $40, and then they might sell it for $60 and it's going to take longer. And so, you know, people have so many questions about best offers and what is your strategy? What percentage do you accept, you know, of your asking price? And I don't even think like that. I'm just like, oh, I paid a dollar for that 3 months ago. My price is $29.97. They're offering $25. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or I've had this a year. I paid a dollar for it. Yes, please. Thank you, Lord. You may have this. Get it out of my face.
Yes. And I found recently I've gotten back into selling cashmere cutter lots.
Oh, really? Okay.
I'm able to get those at, if I can get something cashmere for $3 or less, regardless of the condition, I'll put it in a lot because I don't, and I'll identify the lot. I've had a couple repeat buyers, but some of them will be, a couple of the items will be, they'll need to be repaired.
Mm-hmm.
Which are truly cutter items, but I'll have some in there that are, I just don't want to list because I'm getting away from clothing. Mm-hmm. And if they want to resell it, so be it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm able to make a good amount of money on it. They've been quick sales for me because you can just, I mean, like at thrift stores, I got a cashmere sweater recently for about $2 and something. So yeah, I just threw that in the, you know, put that aside for a lot, and it's sold as a part of my most recent lot.
And for the listeners who don't know, she's talking about cashmere sweaters that are damaged, have holes, moth holes, need repair, whatever. And crafters buy them, and in my experience, they either cut them apart and make something else, like baby clothes, dog clothing, or they might repair the issue if it's an easy repair. And again, people like the challenge of repairing things. I know people that buy damaged things on purpose because, oh, I can fix that and I can resell it for higher. But it's called cashmere cutter. And do you make your lots based on color, or how do you put them together?
I usually do color, maybe neutrals, or it'd be like, I'll say pastel or whatever, in case that is how they want to use them.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it's just, you know, upcycling. I like that idea. And just someone else. And even like I said, there'll be some in there that if they really want to resell them, they bought it at such a price that they can do that and make the money. It keeps my store active. It's easy for me to grab. So it really fits into the model of what I'm looking to do, because I want the mail person to pick up something from my house every day. That's what I want.
Well, and back to upcycling, it hurts my soul to know that this beautiful cashmere is going to the landfill. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, it's so expensive and labor intensive to create. I have this problem with wanting to rescue things. No, this can't go to the landfill. Yes. But also, some crafters will take those cutters and actually unravel the yarn, mm-hmm. and then knit or crochet or like make something else. I've heard of that. So, you know, not everything that's damaged is a throwaway item. You know, it was expensive to start with. So I think a lot of us coming to eBay or have been on eBay a long time, just we like to rescue things and just mm-hmm. rehome it. Like it's an animal at the shelter. Like, oh, we need to rehome this.
Yes.
So I love that you do that. Let's talk about some of your big sales. I've been seeing, you know, perfume and mm-hmm. health and beauty stuff. And it's all these odd things. Like, I've never heard of these brands.
Exactly. But it's me looking things up, you know, and that's just what you have to do. And so that's what I do. I like the category. I find that like anti-aging items, those go well. And then, you know, other things that people may get an attachment to, which could be a soap, a lotion, something like that, even a fragrance. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking those up at the store to see what, you know, see what the return is. They're small, you know, so they're easy to store without taking things over. And I found that that's been a good category for me. I shared recently, I listed some personal items that I got at Goodwill. I was really surprised to see them there. And so when I went back to the car, because I was in a hurry, and I said, let me just look it up. And the return was like, okay, I'm gonna go back in and get these. And I remember you had said a story that you and your daughter, I think, were buying some personal items, maybe at Publix or something. And maybe it was for resale on Amazon.
Yeah, it was. All the discontinued KY jellies and stuff.
That's
and
what this was that I got.
Scented and Melanie called them sex gel.
Yes, yes, that was what this was.
She would buy like 10 of them because they were on clearance and just go to the check. This was when she was 18. So, And she would check out and they would look at her like, what's all this? Or
yes.
And she would just be so sarcastic. She'd be like, I'm getting married next weekend. This is for the honeymoon or, you know, something like that.
Yes. And that was what this was. And so I purchased them all. And because I was like, why should I be embarrassed to buy them? The people aren't embarrassed to, like, Duke Energy's not embarrassed to send me a bill that I need to pay. So if this is what I'm going to do to pay it, then, you know, fine. And I listed them in a lot. I listed higher than others. And I made it a private listing.
Okay, that's good.
Because I remember you had said that. And so they sold within 24 hours and that was done. That was easy return. And I felt like I pulled together some different tips and things that you and others had shared. And that was a win for me. So I do appreciate that, because I wouldn't have even thought about it or known what to do or process any of it, but for your help in mentioning that in a previous episode.
Yeah. And I called it embarrassing products. Anything like that, that someone who's a little bit sensitive in public might not want to buy in public.
Right.
So there's a huge market for that online because of the privacy factor.
Yes.
Shipped to you. Nobody can see what it is. Nobody even knew that you bought it. And it's like, I think we did condoms too.
Yes. Yes.
You know, they're always discontinuing them. I mean, this is by design. I heard something somewhere that it's called the treasure hunt factor for these companies. They'll make something knowing they're only making it for a limited time. And there's only so much shelf space. These companies can't make everything forever. So that's what ends up on those clearance racks in the grocery store. It's not that the item's discontinued. Sometimes it is, but it may be a repackaging thing. It may be it's not one of their top sellers. There's all kinds of reasons. So, you know, you just scan those things at the grocery clearance rack.
Yep.
I'm in Publix all the time. Every time I'm in there, I look because it could be hair color, it could be shampoo, it could be vitamins. But the one thing with health and beauty I wanted to say is you got to check those expiration dates.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And sometimes we get too excited and we forget. And I did that the other day. I bought something. Oh, it was like an Olay anti-aging eye serum or something. And, oh, you know, it sold for a lot of money. I was so excited. Bought it, got it home. Ah, crap. It expired 2 months ago. So I took it back. I normally don't do that, but I couldn't do anything with it. It was expired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So I've, that's been something that that's worked out. I was able to, I purchased maybe a few months, maybe the beginning of the year, I found some granny panties and found some of those at a thrift store. And I listed those. Again, I made the disclosure that it was a private listing.
Uh-huh.
And that was, I think, well appreciated. What I did wrong in one of those sales, it was a repeat buy. I didn't list them all at the same time. I'd let one go, then another, so I could kind of play with the price or whatnot. And so I had a repeat buyer. And the mistake that I made was he wanted a private listing. We agreed to the price and all of that. I think I made too much of a disclosure in the title because someone else came and bought the item. And so my buyer was like, what happened? I thought you listed. I said, I thought you bought it. And he was like, no, he didn't.
Somebody found it.
Somebody found it and bought it. And I went on ahead with the sale as I was, you know, should have done, but I was disappointed. And so I did say that if I ever do a private sale again, I'm going to make some adjustments. Maybe I won't have the picture up as the first one, or I'll do something in the title.
Right. You could just do a picture of anything.
Yeah.
So that someone who's not that specific buyer won't know what.
Exactly.
It says private listing for Mary Jones. And it's just a picture of a cardboard box.
Right. Right. And I will do that again because I was disappointed for that buyer.
Oh, yeah. That's really unusual that someone else would have found it.
Yeah.
I guess they just did maybe found the picture.
Maybe.
Okay. Another thing I want to mention real quick is fragrances.
Yes.
There's a big discussion about, I thought used fragrances weren't allowed on eBay. And so the rule is if it has some kind of applicator that goes in it and comes out, like for eyeshadow or something.
Mm-hmm.
But those used, you're not supposed to do because it's a contamination factor.
Right.
But you, most of the ones I've seen you sell are sprays.
Yes.
And you put them in the collectibles category.
I do.
That's, I don't want to call it a workaround, but that's how people are doing it. Because I did get some comments on YouTube about, you know, you're informing your audience incorrectly that, you know, you're not allowed to sell used fragrances. And it's like, yeah, you are. If you look at the eBay rule, that's what it talks about is an applicator for all health and beauty, just because it, you know, it could have been on another person and it's contaminated. So just setting the record straight. And if you're ever confused about that, just Google eBay policy for fragrances and you'll find their policy and, you know, go from that. So there's just a lot of, I heard and somebody said, and no, go back to the eBay policy.
Right. And read it or ask for some help. And I don't do international on the fragrances because
you can't.
Because it's, you know, ground only. And that's all that I do. Although I see other people that don't do that. I do that because it's too big of a list.
Well, it shouldn't let you when you're listing it, but just for the listeners, it's hazmat and they don't want it going on a plane where it can blow up. So ground only, which means if it can't get there by ground, then you can't ship it there. So yeah, but just to clarify the confusion about used fragrances, that's mm-hmm. What has been your highest sale?
I think my highest sale was I purchased, like you, I ran across some sample medical items. Mm-hmm. And this was someone who has swelling in their legs would wear it. You strap it on and it goes maybe above the knee. Mm-hmm. And I got that at a thrift store for about $7. It was new. And I listed it. I got a pair, left foot and right foot. And I think my profit on that may have been near $200.
Oh, nice.
I listed it higher, but my thinking is and was with medical things is that although you go to eBay to get them, you really don't want to do that. It's your circumstance that may have created it. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want to make a lot of money on it. I got a lower offer and I thought this is someone that needs it and can use it. And I'm going to sell it for the offer. And so I did. And I can go get something else or, you know, something will come to me that I can make up for that. But I would think
that's not a necessity. That's like a Christmas ornament or a clutch or something that I'm on board with that. You know, this is going to relieve somebody's pain.
Yes.
And you don't want to price gouge them. And I think you're talking about like a compression device that blows up with air.
I don't think it blows up, but I think it does kind of compress your stuff. And it might be, maybe it's lymphoma, not lymphoma, but there is maybe it's a, I can't think of the medical term, but they do need, to compress, but it just doesn't require any sort of blowing up or anything.
So was it electronic?
No. Mm-mm.
Oh, you just put it on. Okay.
Just put it on. And I thought maybe, but they could walk in it because there was size. The foot part was sized and there was a left foot and a right foot to it. So
okay. The word maybe you're looking for is edema.
Could be.
Swelling in the legs.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. So, and I think with our aging population now, baby boomers are, there's a lot of medical stuff needed that, you know, insurance doesn't cover. And, you know, they're going to eBay like that diabetic foot massager thing,
yes.
Which I actually bought one of those from Leslie Wilson in Texas, because she was talking about she found one. And I'm like, I've been looking for one. And I just like it. It just feels good on your feet.
Okay.
So, but there's just all kinds of stuff like that. And then the other side is some of these devices are covered by insurance or mm-hmm. Somebody has it and then they pass away or they go to assisted living or whatever. And it's at a garage sale for $5.
Yes.
The person having the garage sale doesn't even know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're just like, oh, this is a medical thing that my dad had. And we're mm-hmm. like, oh my gosh, that sells for $300.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So, the world is changing.
Definitely. Yeah.
Now what else have you sold that was kind of high dollar?
I did sell a pair of bicycle shoes.
Okay. Cycling shoes.
I did. And I've seen someone in the Facebook group said they always look for unusual and interesting shoes.
Uh-huh.
So they had the bicycle shoes were over with the other shoes. They were new.
Uh-huh.
And I purchased those when I was traveling. I got them for $25 and I sold those for a little over $200.
Nice. Do you remember the brand name?
I don't remember the brand name, but thinking, because I remember seeing that you've, because Hencappy is up there where you
yes,
are.
I'm finding all kinds of Hencappy stuff.
Yes.
And I didn't see this in Atlanta because he lives or is from Greenville.
Yes. Yes.
And I think he's retired from actual cycling, but he's very involved in the cycling community, fundraisers, races, all that stuff.
Uh-huh. And so I saw the shoes, and my husband actually did the hand capping during the pandemic. He did one of the
races. Really?
He did. And so I, and that kind of fit into it as well. But I saw the shoes and I did purchase those. I think there was some sort of carbon or something. Mm-hmm. And I took I took an offer on those because I thought, well, a lot of things have to be right for me to get another offer on this. It has to be the right person, the right size, all of that kind of thing. And so that was a good sell for me. And that was relatively quick as well.
I think the brand I'm thinking of is Shimano, S-H-I-M-A-N-O.
That may have been it. That is a popular brand. They do other items as well. I've sold a saddle before. I enjoyed that research because I thought it was a bicycle seat, but it's a saddle. Uh-huh. And that was pretty good because people replace saddles.
Yeah.
On bikes as well.
Yeah. I mean, that's just a whole industry right there of all the stuff you need for your bike.
Yes. Yes. And so there's a lot of opportunity. I see it in that category.
And even spin classes at the gym. Some people mm-hmm. wear those clip-in shoes.
Yes.
Depending on the kind of bikes they have. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's just endless. There's just so much stuff out there.
There is. And we're able to connect items with people that want them, make money in our sleep. We get to, reap benefits of research and knowledge, just a lot of things that come together. And I'm just really glad to be a part of the community.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about your business. Do you have a death pile?
I do. I have a death pile.
We probably need a 12-step program for death piles, but it's really just one step. List it.
Yes, it is. But my hurdle is the photos.
Uh-huh.
Because I just, it's hard for me. I don't have a photographer eye. So I've got to get the light right and the angles and all of that. But all the other part I can do and I really enjoy. But the photos is what kind of keeps me behind.
Well, your photos always look great.
Thank you.
So whatever time you're spending doing them, it's paying off.
Thank you.
But and I will admit that's my least favorite part too, is taking mm-hmm. the pictures. I don't know why. I love the shopping. Really my favorite part is when I get home from having been out all day and I'm logging my stuff into my spreadsheet and it's just like, oh, I forgot what all I bought that day.
Yes. Yes.
And I do my pricing research then when I am putting it in my spreadsheet, just because I'm already on the computer and that's what motivates me to list. It's like, oh, really, this sells for $80? That's the motivation. So I list my items in order of price in descending order. So I'll pick out the most expensive things and list those first and then work through the rest of it. So,
I may make that adjustment to my workflow. That makes sense. Thank you.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, it's really just self-motivation. I've learned what gets me excited about it. And I can't bring myself to do a death pile. I'm just so, it's in my routine to list everything before I get more mm-hmm. because I've tried it the other way and like, oh, I'll just drop by Goodwill. It's on my way. And the whole time I'm in there, I'm like, oh, I got all this stuff at home that could be selling right now, But I know, it depends on your schedule and your routine. And, if your post office is right next to a Goodwill, of course, you're going to drop in there and see what you mm-hmm. can do because it might not be there.
Right.
When you go back.
Mm-hmm. And I've been able, Suzanne, to find some, when I go someplace, for something, whatever it may be. I know I had a project for my church and I went way remote trying to handle that for them. And while I was there, I put in thrift stores near me in Google.
Uh-huh.
And that's how I found my honey hole. I wouldn't have found it, but for that.
Really?
Really, because I was someplace that was off my beaten path and I found it. And I have also purchase other items the same way. If I'm someplace and I have some time, I'll just put in thrift store near me and make it a part of my routine and just go in, do a quick walk. And that's been very helpful. And I've gotten places again that I would not have found any other way.
I'm experiencing that too. I thought I knew where everything was here in Greenville, and it's, I do the same thing as thrift stores near me, or there's a site called The Thrift Shopper where you put in your zip code, but I found that those are not as up to date.
Okay.
If something might come up that's closed and they didn't have it removed from that directory. So yeah, Google's your best bet on that.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's a win and sometimes it's not, you know.
Right.
I've been in places and it's like $15 for this dumb Christmas ornament or whatever. And it's like, I'm not paying that. So yeah, you're right. You make your money when you buy.
Yes.
That's true. Now, how many items do you have in your store?
I keep around a low 300.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to work for me. I have some things that I probably will cull in first quarter. Mm-hmm. Probably be clothing, because I really don't enjoy selling that. And I think I'm going to just get out of that and just focus on other items. Now, especially now that I have a place, a consistent place where I can go and know that I'm going to get some good items. That allows me to rely more on that.
So what part do you not like about clothing? Just the measuring, the photographing?
Measuring.
Yeah.
The measuring. That's hard for me, but it's necessary.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see how I could sell without it. And so I have to, and I like the idea that you shared about having a tape measure on your desk. But I don't work from a desk, so I have to measure each part, you know, individually. And so that just becomes cumbersome for me. And so I've just decided I'm not going to do it. And then I'm also, like, I had problems, like I've heard you mention, photographing white. And so then one day I was like, why am I even buying something white? If it's not cashmere, I'm not going to buy anything white because I can't photograph it. So it's some of those things that are just kind of coming, things are coming together now for me. Mm-hmm. I feel like I have enough knowledge and background and resources that things are just really lining up. I've been on the incline. I'm still inclining, but, you know, opportunity is coming to me now.
Well, and I love that you keep reevaluating your business, because this is an evolution. Anybody listening that's been doing this for any length of time can look back and say, yeah, I used to sell that. And either you don't enjoy it, you're not finding it anymore, it's not profitable anymore. You have to be able to evolve. And really the basis for everything is, do you enjoy it?
Yes.
Because if you don't enjoy it, you're not going to do it.
Right.
It's like exercising. You pick what you like to do, you know, that I like to exercise, but jogging, forget it. I am not doing that. Swimming. Right. Yes. Or, you know, a lot of people that are anti-exercise just haven't found something they like, you know, they haven't tried tennis or what's that, pickleball. That's the new thing.
I read about that. Yes.
I want to get into that. Who knows what else is going to evolve in the world of exercise as baby boomers continue to clear the way for us, you know, inventing things. But yeah, I think as far as your eBay, you know, don't work with things you hate. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that I don't like electronics. I can't get excited about a VCR.
Right.
It's not pretty. I like pretty things.
Yeah.
Or things that I know are good performers over time.
Right.
Just like this always sells for me. Linen clothing can look terrible. You know, it's all wrinkled up. You do have to iron it or steam it, but it sells. And it's like vacation resort wear, you know, it's keeps you cool. It's fashionable. What is it? Coastal grandma.
Yes.
That theme of like looking like Diane Keaton in pretty much any movie.
Yes.
with the white linen top and the big floppy hat on the beach. That's a thing now. Yeah. So when people say I'm a clothing seller, that can mean a lot of different things, you know, or, you know, there's people that just won't touch it. They just don't like it. And back to the measuring, I'm sure there's listeners that are like, hey, I sell clothing. I never put measurements. But what you don't know is how many people looked at your listing and left because you didn't have the measurements and they didn't want to ask you for them, or they don't have time. They just need to find something right then. And so that's the big unknown, is how many sales are you missing? Because same with return policy. How many sales are you missing because you don't have that? You know, you're never going to know. And I won't come to Charlotte and raid your stores without telling you.
No, you can come. Please do. Please come.
Yeah, that would be fun. So you never said like when you started. Was it early 2000s?
I really got into it in the really making a go of it probably in about the mid 2016, 2017.
Oh, okay.
Around in there is when I really started and said, this is what I can do.
And so what kind of advice do you have for people wanting to get into this?
I would say is with anything, you can do it. I mean, there are going to be people who are smarter, quicker than you, but there are people that aren't as well. And you can do it. So just do it. That's it.
Yeah. And it's available to anybody, really.
Anybody can do this.
You don't have to jump through the hoops like you do on Amazon to sell things. And I think now in 2022, there are so many resources available that weren't there back in the day. You just threw yourself to the wolves and trial and error. And now that Terapeat goes back 2 years.
I've noticed that.
You can really, that's going to be so helpful.
It is. I've already used it. So I think it actually may be my default, although I don't know that I'm going to keep that because, you know, current is important for some things.
Right.
But it's really good to have it because I've had to use it.
Yeah, I use current as well if it's something that there's not very many of, limited in number. Like, are there any listed and how much are sellers asking for this?
Yes.
So you definitely don't want to leave money on the table if it's something that, you know, only two of them sold in the past year and there's maybe only two listed.
Uh-huh.
You can compare that and decide what you want your strategy to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. That's going to be fun. Thank you for taking time out of your busy day to come on the podcast. What is on your schedule for the rest of the day?
I'm going to do some listing. I went by the death pile earlier and saw some things I needed to, I need to list that now. It's seasonal. So I removed that and I'll get that listed. And then I have some work that I need to do as well.
You just have to be careful when your death pile starts moving.
It's alive. It's alive.
I know. And mine probably is. So I've got to get some of this move before my son comes home from college this weekend. That's a goal as well.
Okay, good. Well, I'm going to hold you to that. I'm going to check in and ask you how many items you listed.
That's fine.
Okay, well, thanks again for coming on, and we're going to watch for your sales on the Facebook group.
Thank you, Suzanne. Have a great day.
Okay, you too. Bye.
Thanks again for coming on the podcast, Jackie. It was so nice to meet you in person, and that was a really fun conversation. On to today's trivia question. Since Jackie resides in the fine city of Charlotte, which is NASCAR country, where did the name NASCAR come from, and how did that type of automobile racing even get started? Here are a few seconds to think about it. Okay, NASCAR stands for National Association for Stock Car Auto Racing. And NASCAR is rooted in Prohibition bootlegging. From North Carolina to Spokane, Washington, bootleggers during Prohibition used souped-up automobiles to stay ahead of federal agents and local police while transporting illegal whiskey on back roads in the dark of night. The idea was fairly simple. Take a car that looked ordinary on the outside, modify the engine for greater speed, remove the floorboards, passenger, and back seats to store as many cases of liquor as possible. Install extra suspension springs to handle the weight, a dirt-protecting plate in front of the radiator, and run the prohibited booze to customers by outsmarting or outrunning the authorities. Even before Prohibition came to an end in 1933, racing these high-performance cars became a popular pastime among the runners in North Carolina, Virginia, Tennessee, Georgia, and elsewhere in the South. They raced each other's cars, many of them Ford models, on weekend afternoons out in the country on makeshift dirt tracks. Such were the bootlegger roots of the stock car and what would evolve into the National Association for Stock Car Auto Racing, or NASCAR, in 1947. So now you know all about that. Next week, my guest is Rebecca in Pennsylvania. Her professional background is in psychology, so as soon as she told me that, I started picking her brain about human behavior related to working with customers and other reselling situations. Rebecca has been selling for many years and has some fun stories, so make sure to catch that episode, the first episode of 2023. And thank you, listeners, for stopping by my podcast. I appreciate all of you. Remember, thrift stores are filling up this week with year-end charitable donations, so let's all hit the ground running in January. And I wish you all a happy, healthy, and prosperous new year. Bye, everybody.